Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. In this month's issue of Wired magazine, the Electronic Frontier Foundation is running a full-page ad for the technology company. It says, "Your threat model just changed. Incoming President Donald Trump made campaign promises that, if carried out, threaten the free web and the rights of millions of people. He has praised attempts to undermine digital security, supported mass surveillance, and threatened net neutrality. He promised to identify and deport millions of your friends and neighbors, track people based on their religious beliefs, and suppress freedom of the press. And he wants to use your servers to do it." The EFF is calling on the tech industry to encrypt, delete, reveal, and resist. Well, last month, top technology executives from companies including Apple, Tesla, Amazon, Google, and Facebook met with Donald Trump and his children in a closed-door meeting at Trump Tower in New York. These tech millionaires and billionaires say they look forward to working with the administration. A couple of days before that meeting in New York, thousands of tech workers were signing on to the NeverAgain.Tech pledge. It says, "We are engineers, designers, business executives, and others whose jobs include managing or processing data about people. And we are choosing to stand in solidarity with Muslim Americans, immigrants, and all people whose lives and livelihoods are threatened by the incoming administration's proposed data collection policies." Nearly 3,000 tech employees have signed that pledge so far. So on today's Your Call, we are continuing our series on resisting Donald Trump's extreme agenda by talking about how the tech sector plans to respond. Today, we're joined by Valerie Arora, co-organizer of the NeverAgain.Tech Pledge. Valerie is the founder and diversity consultant at Frameshift Consulting. That's a firm that provides training and advice to increase diversity and inclusion in the tech industry. And before that, she worked as a software engineer at a number of companies, including IBM and Intel. And Valerie joins me in studio. Hi, Valerie. Thank you for coming in.
Hi, Rose. It's so great to be on the show.
It's great to have you. We're also joined by Rainey Reitman, director of the activism team at the Electronic Frontier Foundation, with a focus on the intersection between personal privacy and technology. The EFF is a nonprofit defending civil liberties in the digital world. Rainey is a board member and co-founder of the Freedom of the Press Foundation. Hi, Rainey. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Rose. Thanks for having me. Hi, Val.
Hi, Rainey. So good to talk to you again.
Well, it's great to have both of you. Before we talk about how the tech industry plans to respond to Donald Trump, the Muslim registry obviously got a lot of attention over the last year, but we didn't really learn much else about where he stands on issues. Rainey, in the EFF ad that you all ran in Wired magazine, you write that he promises to track people based on their beliefs, but so many other things. The one thing I'm curious about is net neutrality. Where does Donald Trump stand on net neutrality? And based on the people he's appointed, what does that also reveal?
That's a really interesting question. So what we've done is, before we put out anything about Donald Trump, we engaged in a major research endeavor where we went and we reviewed thousands of public statements by Donald Trump and by his primary advisors and by his transition team. And what we found is, overwhelmingly, this is a group of people who are against some of the basic civil liberties that we've all sort of, within the tech community, begun to think of as necessary, not only for a democracy, but for technology to thrive. And Donald Trump's advisors are coming from the bloc of Republicans who are staunchly against net neutrality, and they are the community of Republicans who have fought to strip the FCC of its power to enforce net neutrality, which is really worrisome because, you know, if you remember, net neutrality has been a huge issue in the last couple of years. In 2015, we finally got some rules in place to ensure that, ISPs wouldn't be able to censor the web and limit how people could access certain web pages. And then in 2016, there was a big court battle around it, which we were able to win. And so the question now is, well, looking at a new Congress and a new administration, what is it going to mean for net neutrality? And frankly, at this point, it's looking very bad.
And also, a simple way of explaining net neutrality is that your internet provider would be able to speed up certain websites and slow down other websites, right? So that's just an easy way to look at it. Has Donald Trump gone on record saying anything about net neutrality?
Yeah, so during the heated net neutrality debates, Donald Trump actually tweeted saying that he was concerned about net neutrality rules because he felt they would be bad for conservative media, which of course doesn't make any sense because the whole point of net neutrality is that it won't favor one form of media over another. The basic principle behind net neutrality is that we all have a right to access the content of the web, and we don't want our internet service providers basically deciding for political reasons or other reasons that they favor certain websites or certain content over other websites or content. And so he wrote a tweet that was very concerning, and for better or for worse, so much of what we know about Donald Trump is coming out through his Twitter stream, which doesn't have a lot of room for elaboration.
That's very true. All right, so there's net neutrality. What else can you tell us about where he stands on all of these important issues that the EFF works on?
Well, I'd say two other major issues that are very concerning regarding civil liberties and Donald Trump are his position on privacy and surveillance. In particular, Donald Trump does not seem to respect the concept that everyday people should have absolutely strong security on their phones and that the government shouldn't be able to lean on Apple and Google and other tech companies to provide access to phones or undermine their own security. So that's one. And then Donald Trump is no friend to freedom of the press. He has said some very awful things about reporters, and he's been very unwelcoming to them, and he's talked about actually opening up libel laws so that it would be easier to prosecute journalists if they were unfavorable.
Right. The Chronicle had a really good piece about that and interviewed lawyers who said he clearly doesn't understand the law, because some things he said about libel laws would not be allowed based on the Constitution. And so that will be also very interesting to look at. We're going to actually cover more of that in two Fridays. We're going to try to get James Risen on the show, who wrote a piece in the New York Times saying that Donald Trump will actually have a lot of tools left for him by President Obama, who also cracked down on the media.
Yes.
What response have you received so far from this full-page ad that EFF placed in Wired magazine?
Well, we've gotten a lot of pickup on social media, and then we've also seen a huge spike in EFF donations. I mean, after we put this ad out, we saw this influx that we have more members today than we've ever had in the history of EFF, which is interesting. It shows that people were compelled by what they read, they were interested, and they were looking for ways to act. Many of the things that we ask companies to do are they're not going to be implemented overnight. You know, we're asking people to reduce how much they're collecting on their users and destroy unnecessary data sets. We're asking them to resist overbroad government access requests. These aren't things that they can necessarily show us immediately tomorrow, but they could show us everyday internet users and everyday technology creators. Apparently, were compelled enough by the ad to want to begin the conversation by showing their support in that way, by putting it out on social media and making donations and things like that.
And that is Rainey Reitman, director of the activism team at the Electronic Frontier Foundation, and they put an ad in Wired magazine this month calling on the tech industry to encrypt, delete, reveal, and resist. And we're also joined by Valerie Aurora, core organizer of the NeverAgain.tech pledge. Valerie, I understand that the pledge was started by a group called Tech Solidarity. A number of people got together to talk about these issues, and someone said, why don't we put a pledge together? So tell us about the main arguments in the pledge. What does it say?
Sure, yeah. The pledge, it gets very detailed and specific because technology workers tend to think that way. But the general idea is very similar to what the EFF is calling on tech companies to do. But it's saying, the pledge says, the people who have signed this pledge are individually agreeing to, or publicly swearing to, reduce data sets that they don't need, responsibly destroy data sets, responsibly whistleblow, add encryption or advocate for encryption where it would be helpful to the privacy of users, and a number of other actions that would lead up to and be involved in doing something such as creating a Muslim registry, right?
And there's about almost 3,000 signatures on this pledge, including 50 people from Google, and then the WordPress CEO signed this.
Yes, that was very exciting. Not only did the CEO of the company that makes WordPress, Matt Mullenweg, sign it. By the way, WordPress is the software that's, I believe it's the most popular blogging software in the world, so probably you or someone you know has a WordPress blog. But the more than 40 of the employees of this company, Automattic, also signed in a group. So we're seeing a lot of people standing together to sign this pledge.
And what are you hearing from these employees, especially the employees who work for the companies, who the companies that are led by executives who met with Donald Trump last month in New York?
Yeah, people are disappointed in tech management. I think one of the interesting things about Trump is that it's really revealing that there's such a split in tech companies between the management, the executives, the people who go to Trump Tower, and the people who are doing the work on the ground, the individual contributors who are making the databases run and building the software that we use every day.
And so what are you hearing from the employees about the decisions that the executives will make when it comes to things like the databases or giving the government information, encryption, privacy, and all of those other issues?
They really, really want the tech company management to make public commitments, just the way that after we saw, after this, so many people signed this pledge, we saw before that only Twitter would publicly agree, make a commitment to not build a Muslim registry for the Trump administration. And within a few days after the pledge had started, Google, Apple, IBM, Facebook, Microsoft, and for some reason Uber had publicly committed to that. So that was a thing that people really wanted from their tech company management and are still asking for.
Rainey, what are your thoughts on what Valerie just said, that there's kind of a split between executives and employees of tech companies and how they can publicly at least respond to Donald Trump?
Well, I think this petition, the neveragain.tech petition, which is really worth reading if people haven't had a moment to take a look at it, this is exactly the type of grassroots activism that is going to push tech CEOs to be more public. Because if you remember, Silicon Valley is really built on many of the bright minds that have come in and help create all these amazing tools that people use every day. And a lot of times these engineers are in quite high demand, and they'll be looking for employers who can be in alignment with their values. And so this kind of pressure, I think, is uniquely effective at getting companies to do the right thing. I don't think this is going to be an overnight win, though. I do think that many of the tech companies, and I was very sad to see it, but many of the tech company CEOs went and met with Donald Trump when he came to this area, or possibly they went out there. Sorry if I don't remember, but they went and they met with him after so many of them had criticized him publicly or had supported Hillary Clinton. And so the question is, are they going to say something publicly now or really kind of put in policies into place today before they see some of the worst abuses of, free speech and surveillance by Donald Trump and his administration in the future? So that's an open question, but I think this is a uniquely impactful petition.
And these tech executives, including Facebook COO Sheryl Sandberg, who sat right next to Mike Pence, which a lot of women's groups and feminists were outraged by that, because Sheryl Sandberg is the author of the Lean In book. She encourages women to lean in and ask for what they're worth. And here she is sitting next to Mike Pence, who has a horrific record on women's issues and LGBT issues and so many others. And then you had Apple CEO Tim Cook, Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella, Google CEO Larry Page, Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos. Now, this was a closed-door meeting. They allowed reporters in for, I think it was the first 3 minutes, and everyone went around and introduced themselves, and then the reporters had to leave. Now, Kara Swisher has written about this for Recode. What's interesting, maybe not so interesting, is she couldn't really get get anyone to go on the record to talk about this, but she has been quoting an investor, Chris Sacca, and he says, quote, "It's funny. In every tech deal I've ever done, the photo op comes after you've signed the papers. If Trump publicly commits to embrace science, stops threatening censorship of the internet, rejects fake news, and denounces hate against our diverse employees, only then would it make sense for tech leaders to visit Trump Tower. Short of that," he said, "they are being used to legitimize a fascist." Valerie, what it's interesting that he's really the only one major leader who would go on the record to comment on this event that took place, this meeting that took place last month.
Yep, that's pretty striking. I wish it was more surprising. I do believe that the only way to change that is to create pressure on tech companies where they feel it the most, which is, you'll see one of the issues they brought up in that meeting was discussing how can they get more people, tech workers from outside the country, into work here. And tech is completely dependent on tech workers. These computers don't run by themselves. This is a point I made in another blog post I wrote about the neveragain.tech pledge, because one of the great criticisms people had about it was, oh, these databases already exist. It doesn't matter. If there was a database that had 100% accurate information about the entire population of the United States, you could not make use of it without tech workers to make that work. Computers, if you've ever had, just your car actually runs pretty well compared to a computer. Computers break constantly. All of the time. It takes an enormous amount of work to keep the normal software that you use every day on the internet still running. The fact that executives won't go on the record about this, I think the only way they're going to go on the record is if tech workers, the people who are doing these things, get together, organize, and make a public fuss about it.
Valerie Arora is co-organizer of the NeverAgain.tech pledge that says engineers, designers, business execs, we have jobs managing and processing data about people, and we're standing in solidarity with Muslim Americans, immigrants, and all people whose lives and livelihoods are threatened by the incoming administration's proposed data collection policies. We're also joined by Rainey Reitman, director of the activism team at the Electronic Frontier Foundation. This month, they put an ad in Wired magazine saying, "To the tech community, your threat model just changed," and they're calling on tech to encrypt, delete, reveal, and resist. And we'd love to hear from you. If you work in tech, what actions do you want to see, and what can you tell us about the divide between workers and executives on these issues? What are you hearing at work? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. How do you want to see the tech industry resist and respond to Donald Trump's administration and his plans? Valerie, you just said that these databases cannot work without the employees. These companies wouldn't operate and bring in profits without us, because we all use the technologies. A lot of people feel people who don't work in tech feel kind of distant from tech. And what can people do who use Facebook on a regular basis and Google on a regular basis?
Yeah, well, it's tough because tech workers have a lot of mobility. Like, we can switch jobs, right? But your family's on Facebook. If you want to see your family photos, it's still on Facebook. It's difficult for people who use the software to create some sort of realistic consequence for tech companies. So in general, supporting these kind of things, really talking, honestly, calling your representatives in the U.S. government is very often the most effective thing that you can do. It's very difficult for people to do things as users of these.
So it's really difficult to have an effect on these companies? Is that what you're saying?
As someone who uses the software, that's one of the problems, is that so here's what we talk about a lot with how people decide which companies, tech companies, to fund. They're looking for something called a network effect. And that means that the more people are using the software, the more valuable it is, the more valuable it is to the people using the software. So you, as an individual person, quitting Facebook is not going to affect Facebook's opinions or change their policies, because they've got over a billion more users.
Right.
And it's just difficult to to stop using it.
I mean, some people, Lindy West, for example, jumped off of Twitter. She's been on our show. She's a feminist writer, and she's been, like so many women, receiving death threats. And a lot of people have put pressure on Twitter to actually take action on this. That's actually gotten some traction. But what are your thoughts, Rainey? Do you think that citizens, those of us who use these technologies and interact with these companies on a daily basis, can we do anything to put the pressure on?
So in my experience, I'm gonna agree with Val. It is difficult to get enough people to impact an individual's tech company's policies or decisions because they just have so many, right? So even if one in every 10, you know, Facebook users signs a pledge, it's not necessarily going to impact Facebook's decision. First of all, that's an extraordinary amount of people. It would be on the edge of impossible to get that to happen. There's not necessarily a consequence associated with it. That said, one thing that I found is a major driver for many tech companies and for many members of Congress is what is the news reporting on? And when you have things like the NeverAgain.tech petition or the Wired ad or any of the many phenomenal news articles that have been written since Trump got elected about Silicon Valley's role in resisting Trump, those news articles can actually have a pretty big impact. So rather than pushing, you know, by, you know, sending an email to your social network, think about, are there creative ways or that we can engage with the media? Are there op-eds that you could write? That's the sort of thing that I would urge people to think about if they want to influence the tech companies. And I would also get people to think about, you know, it's not just the tech companies that we need to be focused on in the next 4 years. There's a whole range of folks who will be instrumental in either resisting or supporting Trump policies. And so those are going to be your members of Congress. It's also going to be state legislatures, and it's going to be, you know, tech, and it's going to be others. So look for community groups in your area that can get engaged on this. EFF has launched a partnership with many groups around the country called the Electronic Frontier Alliance, which are local community groups, many of them on college campuses, where people get together and get engaged in fighting for digital rights in their home communities. And I think that's a huge part of this fight going forward.
Well, let's take a caller before we go to break. Let's hear from Ryan in San Francisco. Hi, Ryan. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me. Appreciate it. Firstly, I think this is a great topic, and I completely deplore what the tech industry is doing, acquiescing to Trump. But what strikes me as a double standard is, you know, the NSA and all these government agencies have been collecting all this data on the American population and have all these databases, and the tech companies have assisted them, the hardware companies at least have assisted them for years, and the Obama administration is complicit in this. And no one has talked about that. So it seems a little double standard that suddenly when Trump comes into play, it becomes an issue and has not been discussed before.
Well, that was on our list. And actually, in 2 weeks, we're doing an entire week-long series on President Obama's legacy and the tools that he's leaving in place for use by Donald Trump. We're going to talk about everything from immigration to the economy, this issue, and the media. But on this topic, let's talk about this. Actually, we're going to go to break in just a minute. Yeah, in fact, I remember the New York Times had really good pieces earlier this year about the administration expanding the sharing of data that is intercepted by the NSA. And this is what the Obama administration did. So I'm glad you brought it up. We'll definitely talk about it right after a break. Today, we are continuing our series on how organizations and ordinary citizens are planning to stand up to and resist Donald Trump's extreme agenda. Today, we're talking about the tech industry with Rainey Reitman, Director of Activism at the Electronic Frontier Foundation, Director of the Activism Team. They have a full-page ad in this month's Wired magazine. There's a picture of Donald Trump at the top of the ad, and it says, "To the technology community, your threat model just changed." They're calling on the tech industry to encrypt, delete, reveal, and resist. We're also joined by Valerie Arora, co-organizer of the NeverAgain.tech pledge, and they signed on, a number of workers signed on to a pledge saying that they will not take part in any effort to create databases that affect and go after Muslim Americans, immigrants, and all people whose lives and livelihoods are threatened by the incoming administration. We'd love to hear from you. What are your thoughts on how the tech industry is responding and the divide that we're hearing about between the workers and high-level executives? This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
Listening to Your Call on KALW Local Public Radio. To take part in today's conversation, call 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK, toll free. Let us know if you're a first-time caller. We always like to hear from new voices. And if you prefer to write rather than call, you can email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment at yourcallradio.org or tweet us at Your Call Radio.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We'll be discussing media coverage of state-sanctioned violence against the Rohingya Muslim minority in Myanmar. 20,000 people have fled Myanmar for Bangladesh. We will also talk about media coverage of the Republicans' plan to dismantle Obamacare. And we're also starting a new Book of the Month Club, and we're kicking it off with a book by labor activist Jane McAlevey. It's called No Shortcuts, Organizing for Power in the New Gilded Age. Jane will join us on January 24th, so we hope you can grab a copy of her book and join us with your views and questions on January 24th. And if you have any suggestions for another book for next month, you can email feedback@yourcallradio.org. You can also send show and guest ideas to that email address. Today, we are talking about how tech workers are planning to resist Donald Trump. You may have read about the top executives who met with Trump last month, the executives from Google, Amazon, and Facebook, and Tesla, among others. And a couple days before that meeting took place, thousands of tech workers were signing on to neveragain.tech. That is a pledge to refuse to build databases of people based on their religious beliefs. And today, we are talking about that pledge. Valerie Aurora is co-organizer of the neveragain.tech pledge. And then we're also joined by the Electronic Frontier Foundation's Rainey Reitman. She's director of the activism team there. They put out an ad in Wired this month telling the tech community that your threat model just changed. Encrypt, delete, reveal, and resist. And Rainey, let's take Ryan's call. He says that, you know, under the Obama administration, so much of our data was collected. And the New York Times had so many articles by Charlie Savage about how the Obama administration expanded the data that the NSA was intercepting.
Oh, that was such a great question, Ryan. And I am so glad that he called in and asked it. I think that so many people, because maybe they felt some political alignment with the Democratic Party, or maybe they just personally trusted Obama, they felt like we don't have to worry about the mass surveillance of digital communications by the NSA. We don't have to worry about our entire digital lives being sucked up into this vacuum by the government with assistance from these tech companies, because fundamentally, they trusted, or thought they trusted, the commander-in-chief. And what you always have to remember, and this is such an eye-opening moment, is the commander-in-chief can change, political winds can shift. You want checks and balances in place immediately, you know, rather than waiting just to see, oh, well, will somebody that we don't like get into power? So even if you are among the people who are supportive of Donald Trump, you should still think, okay, well, he's not going to be in power forever, and I need to put reasonable checks and balances in place. So that's, for me, one of the I told you so's I hope to never have, which is, you know, Obama worked so closely with tech companies and did so much to improve, or what's a better word, to maybe not expand so much as like make more efficient the surveillance systems that the NSA is using. Technology has grown by leaps and bounds during his administration, and the NSA has, you know, brought a, you know, collect-it-all mentality to surveillance. And now all of that is getting handed over to Donald Trump, and there's just so many questions about what that's going to mean for the future of the web.
Give us just your overview. When you look at the Obama administration and how it dealt with data collection and how that affected civil liberties, how is the EFF looking at his record?
Well, if you remember back when Obama was first campaigning, he actually spoke out against mass surveillance, and he went on the record as a candidate saying, I don't believe that we need to be collecting, and I'm paraphrasing, you know, hundreds of millions of phone calls from average Americans, and he pushed for reforms to the current system that we have in place around basically allowing mass surveillance of the web. And so, but then he got into office, and those campaign promises didn't go anywhere, right? Mm-hmm. They sort of, we saw nothing happen, and in fact, thanks to Edward Snowden and other whistleblowers, we had this incredible insight into all of the surveillance that our government was engaged in, and we found out, yes, it is hundreds of millions of innocent people and their everyday communications. So that's the kind of system that we have in place, sort of the system that was put in place under Bush and then certainly not reformed under Obama until quite recently, and that was only in the wake of the Snowden revelations. And just to give a little piece of insight, we had the USA Freedom Act pass, which brought in a certain number of reforms to NSA surveillance. This upcoming year, another important surveillance reform is supposed to be slated to happen, and that's really called into question now, given the change in the administration.
And so a lot of these tools are still in place to be used by Donald Trump.
Yes, especially the internet surveillance tools are still in place. So we had reforms to surveillance of the metadata of phone calls. So metadata is who you called, when you called, how long you spoke for, things like that. Internet surveillance, so, you know, all of our communications on the internet, that's the system that we were hoping to see reformed this upcoming year. And that's what Donald Trump is inheriting untouched.
Well, we'd love to hear from you. What are your thoughts about how the tech industry should respond to Donald Trump? If you work in tech, what are your thoughts on all of this? Are you talking about this with your colleagues and your bosses? What are your thoughts about the divide that we're hearing between tech workers and high-level executives? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on Facebook or Twitter. Rainey, how do you think, I don't know if you can even answer this right now, but how do you think the Trump administration will use all of this data? I mean, how will that differ from the Obama administration?
Well, you know, at the end of the day, and I certainly disagreed with a lot of Obama's policies, you know, and EFF fought Obama in court on a number of issues. But at the end of the day, I feel like President Obama at least had a really solid understanding of how the Constitution worked from his legal background, and that, and I don't have that same faith in Donald Trump. I'm worried that some of those terrifying proposals that have been floating around, including things like, you know, mass deportations and Muslim registries, but those are the kind of things that he might want to turn to corporate servers or NSA databases to implement. And I think doing so right now would be questionable, but everything's up in the air as soon as we have a brand new Congress and Donald Trump at the helm.
You know, this is really shocking. I remember over the holidays, I read a piece by Bob Agelko in the Chronicle called Trump's Apparent Disregard for Nation's Laws Raises Fears. And I just want to read a couple quotes from these law professors. Pamela Carlin, a Stanford law professor who served as a supervisor of voting rights cases in the Obama administration's DOJ, said, quote, "Nearly every president has probably done something that a court court has later held unconstitutional or contrary to law, but I can't think of one who had such an across-the-board combination of ignorance, indifference, and defiance, talking about Donald Trump. Jack Rakove, a Stanford professor of history and political science, said, quote, "He's consistently uninformed and he's consistently inconsistent." I mean, it's shocking. I mean, this is going to be the next president of the United States. What is the Electronic Frontier's legal team have in store?
Well, I can't get into details of our litigation strategy. That's beyond what I'm allowed to do on this radio interview. But I will say that, you know, EFF has been fighting in court on civil liberties issues for more than 20 years, and we've got a track record of successes, and we have been under four different presidential administrations defending users and defending civil rights and civil liberties. And we're going to be looking, should President Trump implement policies that violate the Constitution and impact the rights of technology users, we'll be looking for ways to challenge that in court as well.
Rainey Reitman is director of the activism team at the Electronic Frontier Foundation. They have an ad in Wired magazine with a message to the tech community saying, "Your threat model just changed. Encrypt, delete, reveal, and resist." We're also joined by Valerie Arora, co-organizer of the NeverAgain.tech pledge. This is a pledge signed on by about 3,000 workers, including 30 from Google and the CEO of WordPress, saying that they will refuse to build databases of people based on their religious beliefs. Valerie is also founder and diversity consultant at Frameshift Consulting. This is a firm that provides training and advice to increase diversity in the tech industry. And I'm wondering, Valerie, what are people of color in the tech industry saying about these issues? I mean, there's a conversation happening about the lack of diversity in tech, and you're working, thank you, to change that. So what are you hearing from that group?
I told you so. I warned you a long time ago. You should have listened to us. We already know that these are problems, and we've been experiencing them for the entire history of the United States. Yeah. And they're right.
And what are their plans over the next couple of years to resist at tech companies?
So it's a different calculation when you're personally at risk. So my personal experience of that is that I have a disability. I have a pre-existing condition that will make it impossible for me to get health care if Obamacare is repealed, right? So each one of these people who is a member of a marginalized group and a member of these groups that Trump is trying to harm has to take care of themselves first, because it's impossible to resist when you're dead, right? Mm-hmm. So I see a variety, the same way that I do with white people in tech, but it's more heavily weighted towards, how do I take care of myself? How do I take care of my family? How do I stay alive?
What is it like for people of color speaking out at these big corporations like an Airbnb or a Google? Bloomberg had a piece last year that, and people of color were quoted saying, you don't talk really about diversity. You have to sort of be one of mm-hmm. them. And if you talk too much about diversity, they don't like it. So what are you hearing from the people you work with?
Yeah, so that's absolutely true. The thing is that if you're a member of a marginalized group and you speak out in favor of your group, people will attack you at a much higher rate than if you're not part of that group. So what I hear is people saying, hey, this is really difficult. People don't listen to me. It's not until somebody who's not part of this group, in this case, a white person, speaks up. So that's actually why I really focus on teaching people how to speak up for groups they're not part of. So it's called ally skills. But the basic idea is you have a lot of power and influence just by virtue of being white or being a man or being straight, right? And that you can use that and be effective in calling for this change. It's so much more effective for a white person to say, hey, you know what? Our entire board is white. This is a big problem. Or our entire executive team is white. Or everyone who spoke at our company all hands was white. Do that. So yeah, I'm hearing, and I think the most important thing to take away from this is, you just look at the public comments by any person of color in tech, and you're so much more likely to have seen for the last year, at least, people saying this is a real danger that Trump could be in office and do these terrible things. Mm. So, Listen.
Well, and if you are in a marginalized community working in tech and you'd like to share what your experience has been like in speaking out, we'd love to hear from you. And then also the more general question, if you work in tech, what are your thoughts about how the industry plans to deal with, resist Donald Trump and his plans? And what about the divide between workers and executives? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. We have an email from Virginie, who says, are you both saying that Facebook or Twitter are too big to fail? Can there be a system designed to break them up when they get too large, like any other large corporation? Valerie, what do you think?
So the difficulty with these, again, we're coming back to the network effect. What makes Facebook so valuable is that a billion people are on it. What makes Twitter so valuable is that many hundreds of millions of people are on it. I am not sure what the right way to regulate these things are. I am convinced that regulation is totally necessary. One of the things that's very disturbing about what happened in this last election is that because of the basic structure of two things, the way that human minds are set up, where our brains are much more interested in hearing fearful, dangerous things that might be a threat to our lives than positive or, you know, frankly, true things. And the second part is that the entire business model of these social media companies is around, quote, engagement, how much people are looking at or reading things on their website, because that's how you sell ads. And then the ads is, you know, how many people are looking at it. So the entire structure of it is designed to incentivize people to create this propaganda. People are calling it fake news, but it's propaganda that's appealing to people's worst fears and instincts, which is where the racism and the sexism and the homophobia and the xenophobia and the transphobia is all coming out. So I believe that there's government regulation is the only way out of this.
What would that look like?
I do not have the faintest idea. One of the things I am very interested in is there's a movement to try to turn Twitter into a worker-owned or user-owned cooperative. So Twitter tried to sell itself. It failed. It's not the stock price is not going up in the way that people were hoping. Perhaps there's some other alternate business model. I think worker-owned cooperatives are a brilliant idea and could... Because Twitter is this amazing public service. I use it every day, and it's been so helpful. While it's still structured around engagement, it does things like incentivize Twitter to continue to allow Donald Trump to use it to abuse, harass, frighten, and manipulate the American public against their terms of service.
So. That's an interesting idea because high-level executives are leaving Twitter.
I've noticed that, yes. So perhaps this is a time to try something completely different.
Rainey, what are your thoughts on that question? Are these two companies just too big to fail?
I would not say that they're too big to fail. And I apologize if my comments came off in a way that implied that. I think what I was trying to say before was simply that just getting messages from your own users might not have a huge impact on these companies because you'd have to have such a huge number of them. But I definitely think that we've seen, you know, instances of, you know, the market shifting and of, you know, companies, even companies that seemed like they were doing pretty good, find a new competitor or something happen, and then, 3 years later, they are, you know, in the dust. And so I think that can happen. And then as far as, you know, government regulations goes, just to respond a little bit to this point that Val brought up, it's so hard to write really good legislation for technology because it changes so quickly and because our lawmakers often struggle with conceptualizing into language sometimes very moving abstract concepts. And so... In general, there are a lot of good reasons to want to err on the side of being careful when it comes to putting in a whole bunch of very strict regulations that could easily not make sense 3 or 4 or 5 years down the road, because it is so hard, especially on the federal level, to update laws. We've been trying to update a law that was actually forward-thinking at its time when it was passed in the 80s around email privacy. And it was supposed to be a law that, you know, ensured that the government got a search warrant before accessing your email. But at the time, email wasn't something that was stored in the cloud, and so today we're stuck with a law that is unfortunately not appropriate for the age of cloud computing, where we keep emails for years and years and years instead of just a few months. And so that's the kind of thing, working on the federal level, trying to pass, you know, pro-user technology laws, I just, it's so frustrating to be faced with you know, policies by companies that are bad for users, and it's also incredibly frustrating to try to work with Congress to address those things. So
and I'm guessing that
we're rock in a hard place.
Right, and I'm guessing that over the next 4 years under Trump, we won't really hear the word regulation. Kara Swisher wrote a piece about deregulation and favorable tax treatment of billions of dollars that are overseas stored by companies like Apple, and that's one reason why high-level execs won't have a problem working with Donald Trump. One leader told Kara Swisher, "We can grow faster with an administration that's friendlier to business and then raise our specific objections when they get out of line on social and other issues." And Valerie, I think that kind of says it all. They're going to like the tax cuts. They're going to like the deregulation. And then if Trump keeps talking about a Muslim database, that's when maybe they'll step in and say, we're not going to go that far.
Well, they wouldn't step in and say that. They would only step in and say that after there were an enormous number of news stories saying how much their workers, the people who make their companies run, disliked that idea.
Because right now, again, the companies that have pledged that they're not going to take part in this, can you name them?
Yeah. Twitter was the one that came out after a reporter, Sam Biddle, asked them, just directly said, yes, we will not, we swear not to create a Muslim database if we're asked. Mm-hmm. After all of the news coverage that came from the NeverAgain.tech pledge, Google, Apple, IBM, Facebook, Microsoft, and Uber all said publicly a very narrow, specific promise that if asked, they would not build a Muslim registry. We, of course, want a much broader set of commitments from
and
the tech companies.
What companies are missing from that list?
Oh, unfortunately, I don't have that. Oracle is missing. Hmm. Yeah, I think that's the
I'm just trying to think of other database companies, but that's probably the biggest one.
Right. Oracle and IBM would be the larger ones. Yeah.
Okay. What about a commitment to not hand over data to the Trump administration?
No, that's the only public commitments we've gotten. There's been, so part of why the NeverAgain.tech pledge, which is this, honestly, it's kind of a dinky little thing. 2,900 people is great, but even when we only had a few hundred people, there was still a lot of interest in it. It was because the tech companies have been refusing to go on the record across the board since the election. And so this is just very disturbing. It's really important to get people to make public commitments. It's important to get companies to make public commitments so that we can hold them responsible as tech workers, as tech users, as citizens.
Do high-level, say, engineers at tech companies have the flexibility to speak out? I mean, do they get in trouble for doing that? I often wonder why I don't hear more from tech workers talking about so many things that we're dealing with right now.
One of the reasons that I'm on this radio show is because the person who actually did most of the work organizing this pledge, Lee Honeywell, cannot speak to the press without the permission of her company. This is very common. Google has an extraordinarily draconian policy preventing employees from talking to the press or even writing a fictional novel about their experiences at Google. It's taking a big risk for your job to speak up as a tech worker. That's why it was so impressive to see so many people signing this pledge in public, because for many of these people, that was putting their job on the line right there, not just the part where they pledged to leave their job if they couldn't fulfill this pledge.
Well, so signing the pledge was a big deal for some of these
people.
Oh,
yes. Mm-hmm.
Has there been any backlash?
So I don't know of any specifically at this point. Many people are concerned about, and I know that many people, especially people of color and other members of marginalized groups, were unable to sign the pledge because they didn't have the financial cushion or the support or the ability to easily get another job because of how much discrimination there is in the tech community. So they were unwilling to sign the pledge because they didn't have the privilege and the resources to do it.
Right. Rainey, would you jump in there? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, so one thing I wanted to respond to earlier, which Val made this great point, which is that we need these tech companies to publicly commit to making to resisting terrible policies by Trump, and that, you know, NeverAgain.tech, I think, really pushes things in the right direction in a uniquely effective way. That said, so many of the worst abuses of government surveillance, they happen secretly. They happen because a company receives an order under gag asking it to turn over information about its users, and they're forbidden from speaking about it publicly. And often, if they want to resist, they've got to go to court, and nobody even knows they did it. They might not know for years. And so I want to highlight that there's this other very, very important role that tech companies can play and need to play in the coming years, which is when you are faced with an order and it comes under seal and it comes and you're gagged and you can't speak about it publicly, that is often the most important time for you to speak out, because you will be the only one who has standing and the only one who's in a position to even know that the order was received. So there's this really interesting thing that, yes, it's very important for them to speak out publicly. It's also very important for them to do things in private when they are, legally forbidden from speaking out.
And, Rainey, because, as we're learning, a lot of tech workers cannot speak to the press. I mean, in fact, when we invite tech companies to come on, they usually say no unless we're doing a debate about a proposition, for example. Rainey, are you hearing from any tech workers who cannot speak publicly but want to let the EFF know that they're concerned about what's to come?
Yes. I've spoken to a couple, because before we put our ad in Wired, I kind of reached out and sort of chatted with some folks in the security community and sort of got initial feedback from them as well about what they thought the reception would be. And one of the things I heard, off the record was, tech companies are, publicly not going to be willing to put their name on the line in resisting Trump, but the engineers, the security folks are with us. And so that was very heartening. And one of the reasons I've been impressed by NeverAgain.tech is because it has been sort of pushing, is finding a way for tech creators to make their positions public even when their companies aren't, and then actually getting some companies to come out and be public.
Well, we'll definitely be following all of this. Rainey Reitman is director of the activism team at the Electronic Frontier Foundation, and they have an ad in Wired magazine calling on the tech industry to encrypt, delete, reveal, and resist. Valerie Arora is co-organizer of the NeverAgain.tech pledge. 3,000 tech workers say that they refuse to build a database of people based on their religious beliefs. Valerie is also founder of Frameshift Consulting. This is a firm that provides training and advice to increase diversity and inclusion in the tech industry. So, so important. Thank you both for joining us, Rainey and Valerie, and thanks for your work.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Coming up on tomorrow's Your Call, it's our media roundtable. We'll be discussing coverage of state-sanctioned violence against the Rohingya Muslim minority in Myanmar. More than 20,000 people have fled Myanmar for Bangladesh. And then we'll also talk about the Republican plan to dismantle the Affordable Care Act. How are reporters covering Obamacare? And given that Republicans have no alternatives, how are the media holding them accountable? That's tomorrow. Your Call is produced here at KALW. Laura Flynn produced today's show. Malihe Razazan is senior producer. Matt Martin is executive producer. And Helena Murphy is our researcher. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And today, Debbie Kennedy was our studio engineer. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Thanks for joining us.